Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Anti-Semitism rising as protests continue across American universities. Ivy League educator and former SEC chair Jay Clayton says it's time to act.
Anti-Semitism has deep roots on college campuses. We now know that starkly. We got to do something about it.
And empty-ish office buildings could be a major red flag for the economy. Real estate developer Bruce Ratner, he rebuilt Times Square, has a dire warning for his industry.
Commercial real estate is in terrible trouble. I mean, you'll hear people say it's bottomed out. It's not going to bottom out.
Plus, all the rest of today's stories that got us squawking. Elon Musk made a quick trip to China, and two of our own made the trip to D.C. for the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Bum, 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 bum. I'm not getting the laugh. He got a better laugh than I did just now.
It's Monday, April 29th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And here we go, another week. Let's check things out right now.
Meantime, pro-Palestinian protests continuing on college campuses over the weekend. Some schools requesting police intervention to clear encampments, leading to hundreds of arrests. On Saturday night, Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein was among those dozens of arrested during a pro-Palestinian protest at Washington University in St. Louis. She said the protest was about freedom of speech on a very critical issue that needs debate and dialogue.
Our universities are being challenged now. Fundamentally, who are they for? Are they for war contractors and a future that will destroy all of us and impoverish us? You know, or are they going to uphold principles of democracy that our colleges and universities are supposed to represent?
And at UCLA yesterday, dueling protests organized by pro-Palestinian and pro-Israel supporters. There were reports of fights breaking out after a barrier that was meant to separate the groups was breached. And then at Portland State University, they paused connections to Boeing after students and faculty demanded it cut ties over the weapons manufacturing division and ties to Israel. The school has no investment in Boeing, but has accepted $150,000 in donations. Boeing also provides about $28,000 per year for scholarships, and the university's president and the school acted in response to the passion with which demands were repeatedly expressed, Becky.
It gets crazier and crazier. Officials in China, in the meantime, have removed restrictions on Tesla cars after the vehicles passed the country's data security requirements. And just this morning, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Chinese officials have tentatively approved the company's plan to launch its full self-driving features in the country. It's going to be deploying its autonomous driving services based on mapping and navigation functions provided by Baidu. That breakthrough came as CEO Elon Musk conducted a series of meetings in Beijing during a surprise visit that lasted less than 24 hours. Elon Musk's time is valuable. He can do things pretty quickly. When you start hearing about other things that he gets wrapped up in, depositions and things that do it, it's like, imagine what happens in a 7-hour deposition, what he could be doing in some of these other places, too. Tesla shares on this news up by about 7.5%.
Regulators seizing the troubled Philadelphia Bank Republic First Bancorp and selling it to regional lender Fulton Financial. The bank was closed by Pennsylvania state regulator. That happened on Friday and then sold after an auction run by the FDIC. Talk about things happening in 24 hours. Among the issues facing the bank, paper losses on bonds that lost value as interest rates rose and high proportions of uninsured deposits that can quickly flee. All Republic First branches are set to reopen under Fulton's ownership at their regularly scheduled hours today. And regulators were prepared to shut down the bank last year, but bank reached a deal with investors at the time to shore up its balance sheet. That deal, though, collapsing in March, and the FDIC resuming its plan then to seize and sell the bank.
It's so confusing. I mean, it just shows you, if there's already a First Republic, don't name your stupid bank Republic First. And this is a...
Oh, you're confused about the name.
Well, okay.
You're confused about the bank.
No, a year ago, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
First Republic. This is like a $3 billion... This was like... The only reason I think people were reporting on it was because they were confused about whether it was Republic First or First Republic. Mm. This is not the beginning of anything, although... Given the shift in the Fed and everything else,
well,
and
if
everybody
no
talking
rate cuts,
about it.
And in fact, if the next move, not that this is being suggested yet, but
I
the
know,
next move
but,
could be a hike, that would be a different scenario for all of
right.
these banks.
Just because this was tiny and not First Republic doesn't mean there's nothing to worry about at right. this point.
You look
I guess.
For cracks along the way. Right. Shares of Dutch medical devices giant Philips are soaring after the company agreed to a $1.1 billion settlement in the United States for personal injury cases linked to the recall of some of its sleep apnea devices. Millions of devices were recalled in 2021 over concerns that some of the components carried potential cancer risks. As part of that settlement, Philips did not admit any fault or liability or that there were any injuries that were caused by its devices. Philips says that test results show the devices are not expected to result in appreciable harm to health, but it regrets the concern that patients may have experienced. I think the issue was if there was something that broke down and you were breathing in those components,
right.
the breakdown of the components in your sleep.
We're going to talk about a related story. It's not really related. It's just that Andrew and I went down to that thing, the correspondence center, and you came, exactly. You came in saying you're too old, and I mean,
I wasn't saying you were too old.
No,
I was saying
you were saying
too
you
old.
Are. Well,
I'm
if
too
you
old
are,
to be
you know how
a weekend like that.
You know how I'm feeling, and the way I'm going to tie it to the last story is another thing that you have to look forward to, perhaps, is this sleep apnea. Possibly, I don't know. I've had a test. One way, and it was like moderate. I refused to test on my side because if it were to be that I really had it, I'm not wearing one of those things.
No, but I know people who do, and it's changed their life.
You have to wear them because it can be bad for your heart.
Right, so why
I know,
are you
because
testing?
You got to, like, it gets spittle and it gets like,
yeah,
moldy
but it could save
and
your
gross.
Life.
And
it could save your life.
I'm your father.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, and how many MIGs have you shot down a day, you know, Maverick? I mean, you look ridiculous. My wife won't. I can't do it, Andrew. I can't. Have you seen you're attached to this big...
If it'll save your life and make your sleep better,
it
come on.
It's the alternative.
You know me, I'm all about sleep. Sleep to me is the whole game.
It happens later in life for some reason. I don't know why, and it's not good. There's some implantable
it's
thing. Who would not get an implantable thing?
Implantable
who would not get
out.
An implantable... Of course, that
well,
involves
it doesn't work for
an
you.
Implantable thing.
Surgery.
Let's get to this thing that is the reason we're... exhausted and why Becky is always smarter about things like this. Journalists and government officials gathered this weekend, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. President Biden spoke and roasted Trump, rival Donald Trump, but also took some jabs from host of the comedian we had this year, Colin Jost.
Can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, all rise?
Yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old. I had a great stretch since the State of the Union, but Donald has had a few tough days lately. You might call it stormy weather.
The economy is kind of like you on the steps of Air Force One. It feels like it's stumbling, but there is somehow upward progress.
There are a lot of, I don't know, I thought Biden got a little dark towards the end. He used the bloodbath comment and then appealed for freedom of the press and honesty in the press, and then sort of made it pitch that if you are a decent person, there's only one choice in the election, which was also... Colin Jost kind of did both sides, I guess, but something else I heard. It was sort of typical. We've been to probably 10 of them in a row, haven't we, or something? Maybe 15?
I don't know about that.
What, you haven't been
going
to 10
for a long time. I was going to say that to me, the joke that I thought was the funniest was when he looked at his watch and he said, it's past 10 p.m. and Biden's still awake. Meanwhile, the president has been sleeping all week.
Had been sleeping all week
and
in
then,
the morning.
And then said they thought that it was a protest called being anti-woke, which I thought was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, anti-woke.
Bum, 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 bum.
Because woke
I'm
is
not
a
getting the laugh.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but woke
he got a better laugh than I did just now to
because
the audience.
Because woke is a word you won't even acknowledge as having any meaning. And I've tried to use it on you, and you say, I have no idea.
In this case, it's about being woke, or if you're sleeping, you could be anti-woke.
The other use of woke, you say, doesn't exist because there's no such thing.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, campus activism like we haven't seen in decades, as America's young people are divided over the Israel-Hamas war and the U.S. involvement. Former SEC Chairman Jake Clayton has spent a decade teaching on an Ivy League campus, and he shares the concerns of many faculty and administrators.
You would like to style yourself as somebody who's going to change society for the good. Sure, that is a sentiment that's been on college campuses, and it's a healthy sentiment. Do we have a healthy sentiment right now? Absolutely not.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC.
Stand by, Joe. Here's Mike. Q.
A wave of anti-war protests sweeping across college campuses. Joining us now is former SEC Chairman Jay Clayton. He's a CNBC contributor and spent more than a decade teaching at Penn at the University of Pennsylvania. And I know my friend, colleague, who I actually do love and cherish, not just your family. You had a lot of stuff to say about this recently and what might be done. Some pretty draconian ideas.
Yep.
About, you know,
I got get a lot of love and a lot of hate over the weekend
Take the masks off and know that you're never going to be hired anywhere ever again if you continue this. But what and you can get into that with him. Mm-hmm. But my question, just watching it happen, I've been around a while. I mean, I've been around in the 60s and 70s. So I know college kids and I know protesting and I know how that works. And I remember Occupy Wall Street. I look at it now, and I'm just wondering how many of those people just are in love with the idea of going out and expressing themselves, and how many of them are really, really hate Jewish people and are anti-Semitic. What is really behind all this at this point?
Well, I think you raise something that people aren't talking about. Kids on college campuses, adults on college campuses, they do feel that the protesters of the 60s and 70s, I mean, I've been on campus a long time, were heroes. They were people who sort of changed our society through the Voting Rights Act, through civil rights and the like, and they're people to be revered. And so you would like to style yourself as somebody who's going to change society for the good. Sure, that is a sentiment that's been on college campuses, and it's a healthy sentiment. Do we have a healthy sentiment right now? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When I was here in, after the hearings, I think it was in December, we talked about it and said, look, if the only thing that happens here is Liz McGill and Claudine Gay get fired and what's going on college campuses continues, it's a total waste. And what has happened since then? Actually, not a lot. What do we know? Anti-Semitism has deep roots on college campuses. We now know that starkly. We got to do something about it.
And that's 10, 15 years of hiring professors, administrators that... How do they all find each other?
The oppressor-oppressed culture is self-perpetuating. That's another thing that we've learned about college campuses. If you look at tenure decisions.
And Israel just represents, in a nutshell, an oppressor nation almost as I saw it said, Israel and Ferguson are the same thing. And I had to, like, think about that for a while.
We have anti-Semitism is age old. And then you have that coupled with Israel and coupled with this oppressed culture. It's a cauldron for hate. And college leadership needs to just say, we have a big problem and we need to address it. Do you hear that? Do you hear any
president? Columbia University president back after 9/11 said that protests, that terrorism and protests are part of the same thing. So we already knew about her long before she was hired. So why hire? Why?
Well, like I said, it's been self-perpetuating.
Right. Let me ask you just about the role of business in all this. So I wrote a column over the weekend. We talked about it on the air, I think, even before the column itself, about the role that business could play in all this, both in the context of thinking about universities, frankly, as vendors in terms of employment. How every university is hiring these students or not. And not just about saying, OK, we're not going to hire those who are blatantly anti-Semitic, mm-hmm. but whether you might say to yourself, okay, you know what, we would never hire an executive search firm mm-hmm. that had even one employee who was anti-Semitic. The second there was somebody who was anti-Semitic or somebody who was against LGBT people publicly, mm-hmm. you would say, you know what, you guys are on ice completely until you fix the whole situation. And yes, it would hurt innocence, if you mm-hmm. will. But it would probably create real pressure on the head of that executive search firm or the head of the university, the administration sure. of the university, because the other students, who, by the way, have been sitting on the sideline not saying much either, would start calling up the administration saying, you know what, we're all getting hurt here by mm-hmm. this situation because our entire brand is being impacted and we are going to struggle to get jobs if this whole situation doesn't get fixed. I would also think, by the way, you're at Apollo, but, you know, in private equity land, venture capital land, think about asset managers who manage the endowments of these universities mm-hmm. That try to create performance. What would happen if Apollo called up the University of Pennsylvania or Columbia and said, you know what, guys, we don't want your money anymore. We're not managing your money until you get your act together. And by the way, it wouldn't be a totally crazy thing because the truth is the universities are typically sending you guys questionnaire saying, what's your DEI policy? What are your values? And if you don't fill out that form
right.
the way they like, mm-hmm. they say we're not working with you either. So I think that there's an opportunity actually for the business community to use its influence. Now I know there's a lot of people. I wrote this, and there were a lot of people who loved it, and there were a lot of people who said, Andrew, you're being taken too far. But I've talked to a lot of business executives before I wrote that column. That we're trying to think about what is the role of business in all of this.
Well, I will get to that.
Please.
First thing, you bring up a very good point. Universities have been very quick to criticize all of our other institutions and organizations about their behavior, their governance, their self-reflection. I think it's time to say to universities, and this can be for the business community, Congress has done a great job here. Congress has shined a light on the fact that there is no transparency around these types of issues at universities. No self-reflection, no reporting. If I were advising the Fox Committee on this, I would say you should be going out to all universities and asking these questions. What type of perspective, what type of representation do you have in your faculty? Do you have a balanced faculty?
Right.
Have you thought about it? What are you doing to deal with anti-Semitism? Have you fired anyone for anti-Semitism? Are you stepping up? Now, in the business community, Andrew, I don't think that you should ask every student. I look at my students in my class at Penn.
Yep.
I don't think I should be standing in front of them while they're working 60 hours a week and saying, you know what you got to do? You got to go out and make those 1% protesters in the yard who are clearly people that you really don't even want to engage with. You got to go change their behavior.
I think that's fair because this is where the administration needs to do
And they should stand up for those students.
Right. Let me clarify.
They should stand up for those 90% of students Correct. Who want to learn.
But let me clarify what I'm suggesting here. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's the job of those students to go, A, change their mind. And by the way, I think we should also make a distinction between protesters writ large, who may have policy views about what's going on in Gaza, and those who are blatantly anti-Semitic, those who are harassing students, those who are engaged in violence. I think there's a major distinction, and I think we just need to make that. What I'm suggesting is that those students at the school who are the innocents, uninvolved in this whole thing, they should be calling the administration.
Sure.
And saying, this is crazy. But we can't have this going on.
Yeah.
And by the way, you have some of those students doing that because there are Jews and others who have been harassed, and they're calling on the administration to do something. But at the moment,
most students don't feel like they're empowered.
I will say the fact that we are turning to the students to try and change the behavior shows just what a failure these administrations are.
I don't disagree, but I'm saying, okay, so what about business, though?
What about business?
What about all the Wall Street firms that do business with these universities?
I think not as far as you said, hiring no one from Penn, hiring no one from Cornell. But, you know, if a person is engaged in anti-Semitic behavior, I think it's, as Bill Ackman on your show said, it's perfectly appropriate to say, you know what, they're enough of an adult at this stage that they should know better, particularly 5 months later. I can see people getting caught up in the euphoria of being a protester trying to do right. But now that you have time to think about it, look at it. And here's another thing. Have the universities really educated their students as to what is actually going on? Or are they allowing outside groups? Where is the fund? Where are the tents coming from? Where's the funding coming from for what anybody who looks at this sees as incredibly skewed views of what's actually going on?
I have a few ideas, but I guess
step up.
Yep. All right, Jay Clayton, thank you. They were supposed to stop 5 minutes ago, and we didn't.
We're out of time. It's a longer conversation, as we like to say here.
Next on Squawk Pod, the man who redeveloped Times Square and downtown Brooklyn, huge parts of modern New York, Bruce Ratner. The retired real estate developer says his industry has changed.
It used to be that an 11 or 12% vacancy was a disaster for our industry. We now have 25% vacancies, and work has changed.
Plus, an important topic close to home for all of us.
There are tests for 5 different cancers. That's about 45% of all cancers.
Okay, that's good.
Now let's talk about all the other 50, 60 cancers.
You get it all here on Squawk. Keep listening. There's more right after this break.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod. And we might be the only show that brings you a discussion about commercial real estate, interest rates, basketball, and how to make sure you stay healthy, all with one guest. Retired real estate developer Bruce Ratner joined our TV broadcast today. The firm Forest City Ratner is well known in New York for the redevelopment of Times Square and Brooklyn's Barclays Center Arena. He's the former minority owner of the NBA Nets and moved that team to the borough about a decade ago. He has a new passion today, changing how the medical field deals with cancer. Here's that conversation with Joe, Becky, and Andrew.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you. Can we talk real estate first?
Sure, of course.
What do you make of where we are? We can talk about mortgage rates just about every single day and where interest rates really sit. But between commercial real estate, residential real estate, I know you're not out of the business. You're sort of in the business, out of the business. But maybe then you can speak freely.
Yeah, I can always speak freely.
So what do you think?
So first of all, let's talk commercial real estate. Commercial real estate is in terrible trouble. I mean, you'll hear people say it's bottomed out. It's not going to bottom out. When you have vacancy rates in this city of 25% and occupancy rates of almost 50% or less than 50%, it can't recover. And that's because our whole nature of work has changed. And so whether it be Los Angeles or New York or Texas, your commercial buildings in general, unless talking about new ones, are pretty much finished.
You don't believe, so we've had a lot of your colleagues and peers, I'm if sure. you will, come on the broadcast who own a lot of stuff in New York and in a lot of big cities, and they say, it's coming back, don't worry. And you're saying it's not coming, I mean, we
well,
didn't have a camera.
How can it come back? It used to be that an 11 or 12% vacancy was a disaster for our industry. We now have 25% vacancies, and work has changed. I mean, the biggest issue is that work has changed, and that's not gonna, that does not look like it's likely to change. 3 days a week as opposed to 5 days a week. And in case of law firms, probably 20% right. of the people come.
So what do you think happens okay. when you throw congestion pricing on top of that?
I'm sorry, what?
The congestion pricing taxing
on top
of that?
I don't think that's
not a big impact.
Not compared to the real problem. The real problem is people not coming to work. And when you have that, if you have a company where only, you know, we got 49% occupancy as opposed to vacancy, it's not coming back. And to think for a minute that it is actually just because that's what
okay,
they have
so for
to
the
say.
Investor class out there who's thinking, if they're to agree with you,
yeah,
sure. they should be doing what? Shorting commercial real estate REITs? They should be worried about banks? They should be what?
Well, it's a slower process than that. So right. the bank issues, the bank stuff, I think, will generally work out over a period of time. They'll take the buildings back or they'll have them serviced. And slowly but surely, they will lose the buildings and they will have to do something with them. Someone will buy them at a very low price and either tear them down, let's say, the city and build residential. I mean, it's going to take a while. The one thing I've done is watch interest rates all my life.
Right.
And here's what I say. Interest rates go up very fast, always, as they did now, and they go down very slowly. And that's what's happening. Everybody thought interest rates are going to be way down by now.
Right.
It's still a few years. And so, first of all, you're also faced with that. Honestly, the people who get here and talk about, you know, it's bottomed out. Maybe it's bottomed out, but it ain't going up a lot. And so what would you do? I'm not a shorter. Right. I don't know very much about shorting, but I would not. I would look, you have something like Vornado. It's a third of the price that it was 8 years ago. The same thing with SL Green. They own 20 buildings in the city. How do you go from a stock that's two-thirds down
right.
and it's not going up?
But you think it's not. The point is, but you don't think it's going down further. I think that's the question, right? I mean, some people say you can't fall off the floor, right? That's the flip side
I've
of it.
I've heard that expression.
Let me ask,
I'm glad to know it.
I think I've done it. I did that in college.
You fell off the floor?
College I did. I did that all the time.
Let me ask you a different question, and then I want to get to this book.
Yeah.
Residential real estate and where mortgage rates are today, there's a real question about mobility. I'm not talking about economic mobility. I'm talking just about physical mobility.
Sure.
The decision to actually leave a home. And some people are arguing now that we're going to be in this sort of period of people being trapped.
Locked in.
Locked in.
It's a locked up phenomenon. So obviously, if you have a financing at 3%, 4%, you're not about to leave and go to 7%. You're going to double your cost, your annual cost. And so people are going to hang in to where they are. So that's housing. Obviously, rental is a whole different story. And rental in the city, we have the lowest vacancy rate we've almost ever had, 1.5%. We have a housing shortage in this city of probably 200,000 to 300,000 units. And it's almost impossible to build a building today and make out. So, and that's not uncommon in many of the cities because people are basically renting more than they are buying.
Right. If you were back in the business, if you will, what would you be doing right now?
Residential, rental, residential, rental, residential, rental, residential.
Developing,
that's about all there
developing
is.
Developing for that or trying to buy properties on the cheap to then turn over? What would you be?
I was a developer.
Right.
I don't know how to buy. I'm not a good buyer. I would develop. I would develop residential properties.
Let's talk about this book, Early Detection. What led you to do this?
Pardon me?
What led you to write this
book? So my brother died about 8 years ago of cancer. He walked in one day, and all of a sudden he had metastatic cancer. And he lived about 8 months. And so when I'm on the board of Sloan Kettering, I've been there for a couple decades. And so when I talked to everybody there, I began to realize when you had advanced cancers, you don't live. You have about a 10% chance of survival. You catch it early, you have about a 90% of survival. And basically, I had a science background once in my life, and I was consumer affairs commissioner, so I care a lot about these things. And the answer is that you must get early detection. We need right. to do a lot more of it. We don't spend any money on it.
What kind of cancer was it, Bruce, that your brother had?
Actually, it's interesting. They never really found out. He woke up with metastatic disease.
Yeah.
And, so how do we check? Every cancer is different. I mean, definitely got to do the
question.
You got to do the colonoscopy. You got to. I had like a CAT scan for my. You can do things, and you see the littlest thing, and then you look at it 6 months later. If it's still little, it's not
okay.
Then you're
right.
Okay.
That's called a low dose CT scan. It's for people who used to smoke or do smoke.
Can you do that?
Yes, and it really works.
That's good.
Here's the problem. That test is great, but only 5% of former heavy smokers or heavy smokers use it. We don't advertise it. We don't educate people about it. It's outrageous, honestly. We have this incredible test, as you point out, that can save your life. If you get lung cancer early, you've got a 90% chance.
All right. But what about everything else? I don't want to get it here. I don't want to get it here. Right. I don't want to get here. I wish there was one thing that we could test in the blood.
There is one thing. So first of all, there are tests for five different cancers. That's about 45% of all cancers.
Okay, that's good.
Now let's talk about all the other 50, 60 cancers. There is something called Galleri Grail, which is a company which has come out with a blood test.
Yep.
You probably talked about
We've
it.
We've had mm-hmm. them on the air to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, great. They're great. So the answer is that's really the future. Multi-cancer early detection tests, which can test for 50 cancers and where they're located. And it's really stage shifting. Instead of catching in stage four, you catch in stage one or two. Now, it's not perfect yet.
And the problem is the false positives that you have.
It's, actually, not true.
Well, we've heard.
Here's what I hear about false positives. I hear everybody false positive, false. You know what? The problem is false and negative.
Exactly.
That's what we ought to work on. We ought to work on the cases where we don't find the cancer. To be honest, the false positive rate on Grail is only 1%.
Right. It's hard to get killed by a false positive.
Outside of great places like Sloan Kettering, do doctors and hospitals know what to do with this information at this point?
Now you're talking about the most important thing called disparities. Half the book, at least, is about disparities. Example, black women and white women get breast cancer at the same incidence, yet there's a 40% higher mortality for black women. Washington, D.C., people on Medicaid, 50% don't follow up after diagnosis. We need patient navigators. So you're correct in saying the best place is obviously do a better job than a tertiary hospital. And that's a very important thing. We have a fractionalized system in this country, which is really bad. I'll give you an example, urology, prostate cancer. You know, the average urologist does only 3 prostate cancer operations a year. And that's, you need to do probably 250 to be okay.
Bruce, any
hope? I could go on and on.
Any hope?
I get angry about it.
Any hope that basic science finds either a genetic marker or a compound that would be involved in, let's say, metastasis that's conserved across all cancers that you could just test for that?
It's been 50 years since Nixon talked about the war on cancer. And the mortality rate is about the same as it.
That's what we could use. It might not exist.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Might not exist.
I mean, you know something? I remember 30 years ago hearing we've got a cure for breast cancer. Really? Honestly, it's a complex disease.
Bruce Ratner,
a
lot of diseases.
Difficult.
We want to thank you for coming in.
Get screened.
The book is called Early Detection, and go get screened, everybody.
That's the podcast for this Monday. A programming note before we go. May 4th, this Saturday, Warren Buffett will hold court in Omaha. The 93-year-old billionaire will answer shareholder questions for 5 hours at the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. If you are a Berkshire shareholder and have a question, please send it to berkshirequestions@cnbc.com. Again, the email is berkshirequestions@cnbc.com. Our Becky Quick will be reading through them and selecting some to ask during the meeting. And Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, the aforementioned Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And regular listeners of this podcast, please make sure you hit the follow button on whatever your podcast app of choice is. Tell your friends and colleagues to hit that follow button, and you will get the very best of Squawk Box in this easy-to-listen-to, audio-first format every single day. Automatically, it'll come right in your feed, and you can listen anytime. Thank you. We'll meet you right back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.